It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, I wanted to hold off because we had to see how the Eagles would do, Alex Garrett, by the way, against the Commanders. We had to see what the BBWA was going to say in the awards section of the Major League Baseball offseason. And yet, Lou Terminello, I'm glad we waited because we have a lot to talk about. We thought Sunday was great. But first of all, the Eagles going down like that, what's with the missed calls? That's my first question to you. The reffing in the Bills game and last night with the face mask, is all the controversy warranted? I think it is.
I would agree with you, Alex. Again, thanks for having me on as usual. I appreciate it. The call last night, obviously, on that fumble late in the Eagles Commanders game, was unique because it was reviewable to see the turnover, the fumble, but clearly in that review there was a grabbing of the face mask. But again, they are not able to overturn that, even though it was a clear face mask penalty, and that obviously changed the result of the game. That had an effect on the game. So I don't know if the NFL, usually when things happen that has never happened before, that they're not used to. Now we're going to see that, okay, if on a turnover with an obvious penalty, will they be able to review the obvious penalty? And that was an obvious face mask. So that was an interesting situation last night. Obviously, the NFL is the league that keeps on giving when it comes to drama, excitement between the Minnesota Buffalo game on Sunday and Washington Philly last night. That was exciting. You had a 9-0 team lose their first game of the year. Washington deserved to win. They controlled the clock for over 40 minutes. The Eagles had it under 20 minutes. Washington ran for 171 yards. They only ran it for like 3 yards a clip, and you want to be over 4 yards a clip. But by rushing it 49 times, they controlled the pace of the game.
The Eagles made
some uncharacteristic mistakes last night. They only had 3 turnovers the whole season. They made 4 last night. And the NFL, you win a turnover battle, that's how you're successful. That's how you have successful seasons. Except if you're the Los Angeles Raiders, who have only turned the ball over 7 times this year, and they're 2-7. But that's another story.
It is, and McDaniels has still the confidence of the Raiders. Mark Davis, the son of Al, who I'm sure is, as always, rolling in his grave whenever the team goes below 500. Because, you know, his slogan, just win, baby, right?
And that was his slogan for a long, for 22, 23 years. They had the best record in the league over that period. So,
you know, he hired Madden at a very young age. Didn't he as a coach?
Yes, he did. The Raiders, he became coach in 1970. The Raiders lost to the Jets in the AFL championship game in 1968 before the Jets won Super Bowl III. John Rauch was the coach, and then he went to Buffalo, and John Madden at the age of 33 got the head coaching job with the then Oakland Raiders, and the rest is, as they say, history.
I was going to say the rest is history, but so you have that, and then you have this missed call in Buffalo. I mean, it didn't really, you could say it impacted it, but I want to talk about Allen. I mean, you're at the 1 yard line and you fumble the ball. That was the most surprising play of the game to give the Vikings a lead there. I mean, they held them, but then they score anyway. It's just, what a freak play. I've never seen that before, fumbling in the end zone.
Well, it is a freak play. And with Minnesota scoring on that fumble, that was the first go-ahead defensive touchdown in the last 60 seconds since a very famous game, since November 19th, 1978. The miracle in the Meadowlands when Joe Pisarcik and Larry Zonka messed up the handoff and Herman Edwards picked up the ball and ran it in for a touchdown. That was the last time a defensive touchdown led to a lead change in the last 60 seconds of an NFL game. That was a long time ago, my friend. That was 45, 46 years ago.
Admittedly, I was rooting for the Bills there because, A, it was the Vikings. Plus, I always love seeing Allen win. There was a play there. His leg was being grabbed on, and he still got one a few yards. I'm like, this
he's a bull. He's, you know, he's going through a little bit of, he's made some uncharacteristic mistakes. The two interceptions that he threw, I don't know if it was Minnesota mixing up coverage, but the two to Patrick Peterson that he threw, might have been on him. I don't know if it had anything to do with the Viking defense. But, you know, they were up 27-10, the Bills were. They were up 27-23, and they were deep in Minnesota territory. And Coach McDermott decides not to go for the field goal. He decides to go for it. They don't get it. That would have put them up 30-23. Minnesota came back. You got to give Cousins a lot of credit. And Jefferson is as good a receiver as there is in the NFL. He made a tremendous catch, obviously, on 4th and 18.
The defensive back should have
knocked it down, but he didn't. It was a great game. It was the game of the year for excitement and drama and twists and turns, that's for sure. But the Bills will be okay. The Bills should be okay.
It wasn't the best catch of all time, though. I still think that goes to Tyree because, A, that's my generation, and, C, B, it was just in a pivotal moment there. So I just, when I heard that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Obviously, the last great catch is always the greatest catch of all time or the greatest this or the greatest that. It was a great catch. These receivers now wear these gloves that help them catch the ball, where years ago the gloves weren't available or they weren't as well made as these gloves are. The gloves make a difference with these one-hand catches, these behind-the-back catches. Now, the receiver's skill is off the charts. But makes for exciting football, that's for sure.
All right, I want to delve deep into this whole one last thing about the face mask, then we'll get into the Giants. But was there a call made against Alabama when the Ole Miss quarterback had his helmet ripped off? I mean, look, that was a blatant face mask, and everybody was so upset after that play. You saw it, right?
Well, the thing is, you can go back to the Texas game where there was an obvious penalty right at the end of the game, and Texas got a field goal out of it, but Alabama came back and won the game. But Texas would have been able to hold on to the ball, either score a touchdown or take it right down to the final couple of seconds. So, again, I'm not saying that they are favoring Alabama. These are just missed calls, and shouldn't happen, especially in big games like that, especially when they're so obvious.
All right, now we can... Do you have to take that, Louis?
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay, on the NFL side, the Giants, of course, had the best win of the... I mean, actually, no, not the best win of the but of a crucial win of the season, coming back from that loss and a bye week. To win on Sunday was crucial, and now, you know, they say best start in 2008. Since 2008, you remember what happened that year. That's the year Plaxico shot himself in the...
Yep, Plaxico shot himself, yep, in the hip.
And so it's a very different team, because actually that team I thought went off to like a 6 or 7-0 start. This one is a little more gritty. I don't know how to say it, but this team has a lot of grit to them.
You know, I think that they do. Obviously it was a workmanlike victory on Sunday for the Giants. They rushed the ball effectively against the 32-ranked rush defense in the NFL. They didn't really pass the ball much. The Texans showed there were plays where the Texans show why they're 1-7-1. There is no way on 3rd and 9 that Petrie should have allowed, and I know he's a fine defensive back, should have allowed a 5-yard square out on 3rd and 9, end up into a 54-yard touchdown down the left sideline for Darius Slayton. You got to give a lot of credit to Darius Slayton. Here's a guy who was an afterthought, barely still on the radar screen for the Giants, and he's their best receiver right now. I mean, he is.
He is. And Golladay, I mean, just trade the guy or get rid of him. I mean, he doesn't want to be on the field for the Giants. I don't know if he doesn't want to be on the field.
He just may not have it anymore. Those two drops on Sunday were bad. They were bad, and of course the fans are on him, and of course I'm sure he thinks about it. That's a problem that the Giants have, because he makes a lot of money. If they cut him, he's going to be a big cap hit, and we'll see. But he is not contributing anything to the team.
No,
Kadarius Toney is contributing to the Kansas City Chiefs in his first game,
his
first NFL touchdown.
He'll do well
at Kansas City. He will. But some guys just don't work in one place. And let's face it, with Patrick Mahomes and the offensive scheme that the Chiefs use, what receiver wouldn't do well?
Yeah, and by the way, I watch NFL Red Zone, so we were watching all those games. Scott Hansen's great, and they just flip game to game. I told my dad, it's like the ADD channel for football fans. You just go watch
it. That's a good way of putting it. And Scott Hansen is the best at that. How he just stays on point with every situation going from game to game, it's unbelievable. It's truly a great talent that he has.
It's an art. Let's just say it. It's an art.
It is an art.
Now, mm-hmm. Here's where I think wokeness and fragility has hit sports, okay? We got to talk about this. Why is Brian Daboll apologizing to his linemen for yelling? That happens in games. Just let it go. Move on. It's just like, I feel like he did that so he didn't come home as like a very tough member. They're firing professors for being tough in school. I don't think he wants to be tough on the field. It's like, no, that's how you get your guys in shape, yelling at them.
Well, when I saw him do that, I thought of nothing of it. He's the coach. They're the play. Anderson's the player. Anderson messed up on a key fourth down situation and forced the Giants to have to change their strategy right there. I think if you talk to Anderson, he's going to say, no, the coach did what he had to do. He had to chew him out. I don't think there was any reason for Brian Daboll to apologize. This is the NFL. This is your job. There's no reason why you can't concentrate for 60 minutes, 17 times a year. Brian Daboll, his goal is to win as many games as possible, and he has done it. He has changed the Giants' mindset, and you got to continue doing it. This is no league for softness, that's for sure. I have no problem with what Daboll did, and it happens in the NFL all the time.
Right, even Brady gets into it with his guys on the sideline. By the way, we got about that first game in Germany ever, and he wins. And it's like, well, I guess he had to win abroad because here he's not, it's not a hot start for him here, but maybe clearing his head in Germany with some bratwurst, I don't know, maybe that helped him.
Well, the trouble with Tampa Bay is they just don't have the personnel they had last year. They miss Ron Gronkowski big time. They don't have a lot of team speed offensively. Their offensive line is not the offensive line it was in the past. I don't even think their defense is as good as it's been in the past. But the one thing that they have on their side, they're in a bad division. So they'll probably end up first. They're only 5-5. They can win a division at 10-7, 9-8, maybe, believe it or not. That's their benefit to them, that they are in a division that Carolina is not winning. Atlanta has done some nice things, but they're not winning. And New Orleans is not winning. So the division winner is going to be the only team out of that division, unless there's an incredible turnaround, which there won't be, that's going to go to the NFC playoffs.
All right. The I also think Tampa misses Giselle as much as Tom does. Let's face it. They're...
I'm sure. And she already has a new boyfriend, allegedly.
That's
her jiu-jitsu instructor.
And you wonder how long that was going on, because that's really quick after divorce, you know?
Yeah, I have a feeling you may be right on that. I'm sure that that didn't happen as soon as the divorce papers were finalized.
No, and who knew she was taking jiu-jitsu? How about that? That's very interesting. Hey, you know, you talk about heartfelt stories, though, like Ron Rivera losing his mother 2 weeks ago, and this and this.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing how football and life is bigger than sports, as always.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. Even last night on the game, Troy Aikman, I guess his mom died in the last week or so, and they talked about that on the game and how close he was to his mom, and his mom always watched him on Sunday and now Monday night. I don't know if she had been ill for a while, but yes, we forget sometimes that these players, these announcers, these people that keep us entertained and that we gravitate to as athletes, because they give us enjoyment and entertainment. They're human beings. That's
Thank
the one thing we forget.
And Aniston lost her father yesterday, who was a great... I didn't know he was an actor himself. That's very interesting. So,
yeah, I have to admit, I didn't know that either until I read that.
But you were in the Days of Our Lives fan? You weren't watching that while you were trying to get Netflix?
Well, one of my friends, she's a Days of Our Lives fan, and I guess it's still on. So she probably knows, and she's on top of all of this soap opera stuff. But I didn't know that. I did not know that he was a soap opera star.
How about that? All right, one last thing in the NFL before I move to baseball, and actually more so the Nets losing to a LeBronless Lakers. We have to address them too. But Jeff, Saturday, winning a coaching debut, I know guys like Cowher are pissed off that, you know, Irsay went that route, and I think Irsay's a little crazy. He's always been crazy. But what if that gamble turns up?
Look, Jeff Saturday has been a consultant for the Indianapolis Colts, the team that he won the Super Bowl with. He
well, Hall
was
of Famer with them, I feel like.
Pardon me?
He had Hall of Fame kind of career with them.
Yeah, absolutely, there's no doubt about it. And let's face it, Irsay is the owner. It's his team. He could do whatever he wants. And he put Jeff Saturday in. Yes, it's an interim tag. Maybe he'll end up being he'll be the permanent coach. But why is everybody going crazy on this? I don't understand. The guy obviously knows football, and he won the game Sunday. He did what he had to do. He put the best quarterback back into the game, Matt Ryan, because he had a chance to win the game. I have no idea where this is going to end up, but there was no reason for the outcry to be that definitive, and that outrage had to be at that level. I mean, I disagree with Cowher. I do.
I think Cowher's a little sour. He didn't get a look at as a head coach. Maybe that's something, because he wants to coach again, doesn't he? Eventually, I mean, maybe.
I think his coaching days are over. If he hasn't taken the job now, he's been out of coaching for a long time. I really don't think Cowher's ever going to coach again.
And then you know McCarthy with the losing to his former team. I think people want them to go packing if they're Dallas fans. It was a very weird win, though, obviously, in overtime. I mean, I saw they were down 28-14, come back and win it. What happened?
Well, in that game, this is going to be a game where, depending on where Dallas ends up at the end of the season, whether they win the division, whether they lose a home game, this game Sunday is going to bite if they don't get where they want to be. They were up 28-14 in the fourth quarter. And their defense is too good to give up a 14-point lead. Yes, I know it's against Aaron Rodgers. But with 13:23 to go, Green Bay had 4th and 7, and Dallas couldn't hold them. They get the touchdown. This kid comes out of nowhere. This Christian Watson, who played for the powerhouse North Dakota State teams that have won 9 out of the last 11 FCS championships. He scored 3 touchdowns that day. But there's no way Dallas should have lost that game. Then the other controversy, when they won the 35 in overtime, instead of trying a 53-yard field goal, they went for it. They didn't get it. I can go either way on that one. They could have punted. The 53-yard field goal might have been problematic because they were going into a wind, allegedly. But the thing that bothered McCarthy was the play before when C.D. Lamb was held defensively, interfered with, and they would have kept the ball. But that's a loss that should not have happened for Dallas. No way. No way.
I was waiting for, like, the domino effect. What I mean by that is you had the Bears blow a lead to the Lions. You had the Vikings come back. I mean, they were down that game against Buffalo. I was worried about the Giants blowing their lead a little bit just because of the trend. And then Dallas caps it off with that. And, you know, I think it's going to be a great Thanksgiving game. Finally, a Thanksgiving game for the Giants worth watching. The last few times, they've kind of been, they've lost a few of those games on Thanksgiving. Maybe this is a turnaround here. We'll have to see. But first, they do face the Lions. And this is what I want to look ahead for a second. Mm-hmm. They face the Lions, who have a 3-game win streak. I feel like it's a bit of a threat coming in on a hot streak like that.
Well, this is the thing about the Lions. The Lions defensively are pathetic. Their defense is almost as bad as is worse than Houston overall. But the one thing that the Giants have to be careful, and the Giants aren't a high-scoring team. They play a lot of games close to the vest. The Lions can score, and that's where the Giants have to be careful. And I know the Giants' defense has been effective, but really besides Aaron Rodgers, they haven't played. Yes, I know they beat Lamar Jackson, but their games against top-notch quarterbacks have been limited. Goff is a good quarterback who plays for a bad team. But their offense is pretty good. The Giants have to be careful this week. I'm not saying the Giants are going to lose, but they better be sharp and be ready to play. The game on Sunday was a little bit of a bore fest. I don't think this game Sunday, even though the Lions are going nowhere, I think this is going to be an exciting game Sunday.
Well, right.
There's going to be a lot of action Sunday.
You cannot let them, from what it sounds like, you can't let them at the 10-yard line like they let the Texans, who actually turned it over in the red zone twice that game. You're saying that may not happen here. They might actually convert on these red zone.
They just might. And, the Giants should win. I know the Giants are favored. They're home. They should win. The Giants have the better roster. But this, you got to concentrate. No slip-ups, no turnovers. You don't want to give Detroit a short field. That's what I'm saying.
Real quick, the Jets, the Jets come back from their bye week this week, and that week off, I think it came at a good time. You know, they were trying to – they had a good win. Now you get a rest out of it. And this weekend, they will end up playing – hang on 1 second – They come back this weekend and play the Patriots. So, I mean, they lost to them earlier. What a redemption game that could be for the Jets.
Yeah, I wish that the Patriots didn't have a bye week also. The bye for the Jets came out at a good time. It comes right in the middle of the season. Jets have played 9. They have 8 left. This is a winnable game. The Patriots have beaten the Jets 13 years in a row. I think for the rest of the season, the Jets will only go so far as the development of Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson needs to keep getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Can't make mistakes. Because let's face it, the NFL, the turnover battle is where teams are successful or unsuccessful. And you have to have the quarterback. So Wilson has to be a difference maker in a couple of these games if the Jets are going to have a winning season. I'm not even going to say make the playoffs, but a winning season. I think they could. I think they can go 9-8, which would be remarkable. They have a good roster. This is going to be a tough game. You know, you get Belichick 2 weeks, and that's a scary proposition. And we'll see. They just cannot turn it over. Got to keep the New England crowd out of the game. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. This is a toss-up game. This is a toss-up game. It's probably going to be like a 23-13 game either way. I can't see it being a high-scoring game. That's for sure.
Well, it's funny because every time you picked against the Jets, they've surprised you. So maybe they'll surprise you again.
I'm not picking against them like a couple of weeks ago when I said Buffalo's 12.5-point favorites and they will cover. and I was happily wrong on that. This is an either-or game. The Patriots obviously have the advantage. They have the coaching advantage. And that's not to say that Robert Saleh has done a poor job, but Belichick is one of the two or three, if not the greatest coach of all time. And
he's the man.
New England. And New England has their number right now. But, yeah, so it would be do wonders for them to win on the road at New England.
All right, let's move to different sports because I have the Hall of Fame weekend, I guess, for the NHL this weekend, and they had a huge, did you see them against each other? You had all these NHL legends against each other. It was pretty fun. And staying in hockey, I did not know the Devils have a 9-game win streak. You reminded me of that. And then the Islanders have been moving along here. I mean, Barzy gets 1,000. It's been humming along for them.
The Islanders, since that first week where they were in and out, as far as which way they were going to go, they've taken off, and they're now 11-6. They've won some tough games. They came back against two very tough teams, back-to-back nights, Colorado, back-to-back games, Colorado and the Rangers, when they were down 3-1 in the third period, and they came back to win both of those games. They still need to do a little bit more. They still have to get more out of Anthony Beauvillier. Oliver Wahlstrom had his fifth goal last night on the power play. I mean, they need him to become consistent. And those are the keys. If they can get these young guys to be consistent, I think they'll be okay. The NHL Eastern Conference is very, very, very tough. So you can't go through any long slumps because you'll be out of it. And usually you want to do well in the first quarter of the season. They say American Thanksgiving is the first benchmark, and right now as we're approaching American Thanksgiving, the three New York area teams, Islanders, Rangers, and Devils, all are looking good. I mean, the Devils have won 9 in a row. They're 12-3. Their young players are coming through, Nico Hischier, Jack Hughes, who's going to be a superstar. He's still only 21. Jasper Pratt, they're getting points a game from these guys. They're getting decent goaltending. Their goaltending had always been their issue. Last year they went through, I think, 7 goalies. Vitek Vanacek has been good for them. He did get hurt last week, and they had to go with the third-string goalie, but they still won against Arizona when they had Schmidt in there. Are the Devils going to make the playoffs? I would probably say no. I'd say there'd probably be a tailspin somewhere in there. But is the arrow pointing up for the Devils? Definitely. And obviously, the Rangers obviously are a playoff contender. No, there's no locks for the playoffs, but it's going to be a very interesting winter with the hockey teams in this market.
Yeah, I mean, and next week I'm excited. You got Connor McDavid taking on all three of them in a row here. We got Monday at the Devils, Wednesday at the Islanders, Saturday, Thanksgiving weekend, against the Rangers, and that's going to be a test. I mean, look, I'm kind of looking at that on the calendar because it is McDavid. I mean, how can you not look at that when he comes into town, right?
Well, Connor McDavid, I mean, obviously that tried to put Austin Matthews on the same level with him, even his teammate, Leon Draisaitl, who's a tremendous player. But the best player, not only in National Hockey League, but in the world, is Connor McDavid. He's tremendous. He's a tremendous player, which makes you scratch your head even more that the Edmonton Oilers have not gone to a Stanley Cup final, that they haven't had more success in the postseason. I know they did well last season in the postseason, but they didn't get to a final. You think that with McDavid, he would be able to take them there, but there's always something missing with the Edmonton Oilers. Just the same thing with the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's something missing with them. And they might even have a deeper roster than Edmonton. But McDavid is off the charts.
It looks like, breaking news, by the way, because we're going to segue into baseball now, Dan Schulman is leaving ESPN's baseball coverage. Does that mean that was his 12th and final World Series? I'm really disappointed right now. I'm just seeing that on the wire.
Well, a couple of years ago, he left Sunday Night Baseball. He left because he wanted to be more with his family. I think he got remarried during that time, but he was still doing baseball for ESPN Radio. That is breaking news. He's an excellent announcer. He's excellent at college basketball, and he's excellent at baseball. He's an excellent announcer. He's also the Jays announcer on TV. So I don't know what his future plans are, but he's a young man. It's not that he's an old man. He's a young man, so I don't know what's going on there. But he is an excellent announcer.
He's college baseball, college basketball now. So he actually did that game from the USS, which was great, Michigan.
He did a great job. And by the way, I'm glad you brought that up. I've seen a lot of games from aircraft carriers. That game the other night was the best presentation. It looked the best. That was well done.
Our own Hall was on there. Stephen Hall was on there at least once in our time carrying them.
Yes, yep. Mm-hmm.
And I know they had an experience. And, speaking of Hall, I guess we'll go there next. Holloway faces an old team. St. Peter's does not have some of the big standouts they had last year, and so they kind of have to work from the ground up. But I'm sure for Shaheen, even though they blew him out, it was special to face that team that just over a few months ago had captured the heart of the tri-state and the nation, if you will.
It did. St. Peter's, they captured the heart of the nation. That was what St. Peter's did is remarkable, and that's why everyone loves March Madness.
And I don't know. It looks like they may not be able to get there. We'll have to see down the pike here. But, yeah, college basketball is back, and Stephen Hall's got a 2-0 start so far, which is promising. I know it's sort of been not easy competition, but it's not the hard heavy hitters yet. But, hey, a win's a win.
No, a win's a win, and obviously these games are good because they act almost like preseason games. And their team looks
pretty... Well, you also told me once that they actually lead to something in March. It helps the selection committee figure out who will be seeded, right? That helps them with the seeding.
It absolutely does. Like, they're playing Iowa tomorrow night at Prudential, and Iowa obviously has had a good basketball tradition. And winning a game against an Iowa carries more weight than winning a game against Monmouth. But tomorrow night will be a good test. I'm glad it's at home, and we'll see what happens there. But they have a tough schedule coming up. They play Iowa, then they play Penny Hardaway's Memphis team at Prudential. I think it's at Prudential next week. Then they got to go to Kansas, so we know that's going to be a monster game for them to win. But again, it's all built up to the Big East season, which begins earlier this year. I think I saw on the schedule it begins a couple weeks early. It usually begins right around New Year's Eve, December 30th. I think I saw their first game is against Providence on the 17th. So,
interesting. Lou, I was just thinking, as we talk about sports, we should also come to the table with like a story that not many people are talking about, but that we heard about like individually. So any sports story that you heard about that may not have been, highlighted as much as you wanted it to be.
What we could talk about, obviously, we just talked about one that hasn't gotten that wasn't as highlighted. The Devils' nine-game winning streak, that has really been under the radar screen. Yeah, I know we're not in the meat of the hockey season yet, but that's one. Another one is the Manager of the Year. And one thing I did not know, and I guess I'm not even sure if they gave out a Manager of the Year back in 1969. I would have to check that out. But no New York Met manager has ever won Manager of the Year, and Buck Showalter's Manager of the Year tonight. So that has gone under the radar. But I guess there wasn't a Manager of the Year in 1969 because nobody else in the National League could have won Manager of the Year except Gil Hodges. So I think they might have started Manager of the Year in the early 80s. I could be wrong there.
The New York Times is talking about these female athletes making NIL deals, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't care if you're in cheerleader, softball, volleyball, you're a female athlete, and they should be able to get NIL, just like any male athlete should be able to get NIL considerations.
Absolutely. You're 100% correct.
And
you're absolutely right. I mean, they're no different than anybody else, and they should be able to get money just like the Ohio State offensive line is getting money. It should be equal. There's no doubt about it. Bryce Young got $1 million before he even took a snap at Alabama.
That was like, okay, I guess they're getting paid to lose or whatever, and they upset them, so that added to it.
I think the whole Texas Tech offensive line got paid $25,000 a person by some local
down in
Texas or some booster. I mean, this is the way – first of all, this NIL thing is a real issue. I don't even think we've seen the damage that it's caused. Now, do I think that they should be paid for their image and likeness? 100%. But I think it has to be, I hate to say it, it almost has to be capped out. I don't know where this is going to end. But how could a Seton Hall or a Providence recruit a great high school player, male or female, when somebody from Kentucky or Ohio State can give them some more NIL money than somebody who follows Seton Hall does, or a sponsor of Seton Hall does? This book is still wide open. It's something to really take a look at. I have no idea what the future of college sports is going to be like. I mean, I don't know if the NCAA is going to be anything of the past. It's just going to be these super leagues, like we see maybe with the Big 12 and the Big 10 and the Southeastern Conference. But I don't want to remember, in my opinion, when they say any more, they call them student athletes. Okay, they are student athletes, but they're basically semi-professionals.
Oh, yeah, especially because the league, the NCAA makes a lot of money on them. Hey, you know, one last topic, because we can talk about the full, you know, awards, but I'm more curious to know if the absence of Kyrie Irving is noticed. I mean, look, they go out to the coast, they lose to L.A., he's not with them on the trip. I mean, this is becoming a story even more now.
Well, I think the big change, and the Nets are 4-2 or 4-3 since Nash was fired, has been that Steve Nash had to go. I don't think this has anything to do with Kyrie. Yes, Kyrie's a distraction. There's no doubt about it. But they, up until Sunday, and Sunday night they were just pooped. They had nothing left in the tank after winning on Saturday against the Clippers in the same building. Jock Vaughn has made a difference. He's involved in every play. He talks to them from the bench. He, in the post-game press conference after one of the first games, the Nets couldn't protect the rim. The Nets don't have any natural rim protectors. He says, we have a plan to protect the rim. And they've done that. Again, they're going to get tuckered out. They played Sunday night without Simmons, without Curry, who was great on Saturday, but He is still recovering from that ankle surgery. They don't have Kyrie, and they got to make a decision. Kyrie might be a screwball. He might be way out there, but his talent on the floor separates them from the middle of the pack. With no Kyrie, they're just another team, even with Durant, because
they're missed in that regard, that his talent's not on the floor, I guess is my question.
Yeah, no, they miss his talent on the floor. There's no doubt about it. I guess they'll be shorthanded again tonight a little bit. Joe Harris hasn't recovered from his multiple surgeries on his ankle last week, last year, and they need him. The Nets have not been a good three-point shooting team. And, again, you can't count on Durant 82 games a year, because if you're going to be playing him 40 minutes, especially when you play three games in four nights or back-to-back, it's not going to happen. You're not going to be effective. I have no idea what the Nets are going to do with Kyrie, what the league is going to do with Kyrie. But again, he's got to come back soon. They got to make a decision on this. I mean, it's not like he committed murder. I don't agree with what he did, what he said. And I actually have it from pretty good sources. He didn't even see the stupid movie. So, again, I don't know if he'll ever play for the Nets again, if he'll ever play in the NBA again, but the Nets have to move on from him, and they need to get somebody. They're not going to get somebody as good as Kyrie's on talent-wise, but they have to do something to improve the talent level.
I'm going to leave you with one little trivia with baseball. Do you know Jim Boughton was a pinch hitter in 1962? It was one of their guys. It might have been Whitey, because they were resting him. I don't know how he got in the game. But he went 0-for-1, and that was kind of his batting career. It was very weird to find that out. That it was near the World Series of 62. I don't know if you remember that time or not, but
In 62, the Yankees beat the San Francisco Giants in seven games in what was one of the – which was a very exciting World Series. Yankees won game 7, 1-0. Roger Maris made a great play on a ball hit. I want to believe it was by Matty Alou or Jesus Alou or Philippe Alou, one of the Alou brothers. And Willie Mays, I think, held up at third, or maybe Willie Mays hit the ball. But Maris made the play, and the Giants had second and third, two out in the bottom of the ninth inning. And then Ralph Terry went to pitch the complete game, gave up a line shot to Willie McCovey, but went right to Bobby Richardson, the Yankee second baseman, and that was the final out of the World Series, 1-0, but that was an outstanding World Series. A little bit before I started really getting into it, I didn't realize that Jim Boughton pitched in that series, since you just told me.
Boughton, you know, as you know, was a great pitcher for that team. I didn't know he pinch hit also it's funny how that works anyway, or how that worked out. Anyway, Lou, love talking with you. I thought we had a great combo here, and we will do it all again next week. We'll break down the award winners and break down another week of football. We're just moving along here, sir.
Yeah, time flies. I mean, we're coming into Thanksgiving week, where obviously that's where you separate the cream of the crop from the also-rans in both college and pro football, and it's exciting times. We love the games.
We do. We love to see undefeated that aren't expected to be undefeated, like TCU. That's very interesting in the college world. But for now, I'm Alex Garrett. This was Lou Terminella's take number 6. I can't believe it. Take 6 already. And we'll do it again next week, Lou.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm Alex Garrett, and that was the Sports Spotlight on Lou Terminella.